Fuck you! Australia! Germany! Africa!
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And, whoa, what in the, go figure. And we begin, late, but we begin. This is the horn for, wow, audio's kind of all over the place, isn't it? This is the horn for More and Monday, the 11th day of January, 2016. Hey, well, great. Good crowd in the chat room. Good evening, everybody. I'm finally here. Good evening to Anatole and Jug of Punch and Kathy and King of Cups and Little Gray and R.L. Smith and Todd and Truth Seeker and Will in Chicago, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky. Sorry for the delay. It was really quite unavoidable, actually. I've been on about a 200-mile round trip. dealing with stuff. Margie is moving back home. Yay. And I'm thrilled to have... we're thrilled to have Margie back home. And so... Well, the back roads and potholes of almost level West Bicol, Virginia stand. Ye have... always with you. And thanks, of course, to Agnes for sitting back here and keeping things rolling. We had oodles of internet problems last Friday. No internet problems this evening. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, but I figure if you've hung around patiently this long, you probably know that. And it really is More and Monday on the horn, and God Almighty, as More and Mondays go, we have a wealth of them. We have a an embarrassment of riches, More and wise. Ron in the frozen north, and I trust it is frozen now because we're going to be doing some serious freezing here in a little bit, expecting snow for the next 36, 72 hours. I don't know, 48 hours probably. Ron in the frozen north says, I was finally able to tune in and then late, and the timing was perfect. I caught the intro. Don't expect that to be a regular occurrence. Steve in New York says, you're not late. As with wizards, you arrived just when you intended to. Oh, actually, that's not true, Steve. I intended to arrive considerably earlier. And by the way, update from the frozen north. Ron says, effing A, it's freezing. Yeah. And I'm happy to announce that we closed the fundraising gap over the weekend, and particular thanks to our subscribers for making that happen. And to a friend from the frozen north. Yes. Thanks very kindly to Chris up in the Northwest Territories. Thank you very much. And hopefully, we'll hear from you soon. So that leaves us, my God, the bill paying I did over the weekend. Breathtaking. But it gets a lot of wolves away from the porch, and so we can just go forward as is. Thank you very kindly, one and all. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, says Agnes deserves a cowbell. I agree wholeheartedly, and I will ring it joyfully around her until she tells me to stop. Directly after the program closes. No, like I said, we've got an absolute wealth of Morans, an embarrassment of Morans, and where to start? Because there's oodles. I got a couple here that should probably wait until prayer meeting Wednesday, but I've learned over the years that if you do like chefs do with dodgy cuts of meat, and you just write on the package "save for well done," because everybody who orders well done gets the crummiest cuts of meat in the restaurant. If I do "save for prayer meeting Wednesday," it'll get lost in the shuffle, because we got 2 days between now and Wednesday, and that means there'll be 25 more prayer meeting Wednesday stories between now and then. It's not fruitful. So there's going to be that, and there's going to be lots. Just let's call it that. Lots and lots and lots of Morans. And hey, since we're talking, a little sedition and a little encouragement of sedition and a little incitement of sedition along the way for good measure, if that's what we call it. Yeah. So let's get started, shall we? Hey, where do we go first? How about down to Atlanta? And I read this story, and it comes from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And sometimes I read stories that have sensational headlines, and I try to sort of, I make sure I read all the way down in, get all the detail, because I want to make sure that there's nothing in it that makes me think that maybe there was a way in this case that the police could have acted perhaps in some more reasonable fashion. And I have to admit at the outset that my knowledge, this is just my old white guy geezering. My knowledge of the rap hip hop universe is not as extensive as it very likely should be. No. But nonetheless, I don't think I have to have that. I don't think I have to have that in order to make sense of this particular story. One, there is a there's a person, a guy by the name of Sam Benson, and Sam Benson is a rap artist, a hip-hop artist. I'm not sure. Okay. He's simply referred to as a rapper. Don't I sound nerdy? A rapper. But he goes by, on stage, he goes by Black, B-L-A-C, Youngsta, Y-O-U-N-G-S-T-A. Black Youngsta. And apparently he is actually quite successful at his craft, because he's made a great deal of money. I mean, we're not talking about Powerball jackpot money, but some pretty serious Jed Clampett walking around cash. And he lives in the Atlanta area. So Sam Benson, who is known on stage and to his legion of fans as Black Youngsta, decided he wanted to buy a new car. I mentioned Jed Clampett for a reason. Well, he went, and people who know Buckhead know that well, those who know Atlanta know that Buckhead is a very Tony part of town and has been for quite some time. I mean, the Ritz-Carlton's in Buckhead. There are some just breathtaking jewelry stores, that kind of. It's in a way, it's kind of Atlanta's answer to Rodeo Drive, if that's still the big deal. But maybe it's not, because I don't know that either. But suffice to say that Sam Benson went to the bank, and apparently he does his banking with Wells Fargo. And Wells Fargo is, of course, this big, nasty, predatory banking entity. But we'll leave that out of the equation for the moment. And I said I mentioned Jed Clampett for a reason, because if there are any people out there who want to look at this story and say, well, you know, that's just how those people are, I can't tell you within my past the stories that I have heard about hillbillies, especially people who grew up in the Depression, who dealt in cash only. So Sam Benson wanted to buy a new car, and he didn't want to just, you know, buy the latest little Chevy crap box or whatever. He wanted a highfalutin, turned out Mercedes-Benz automobile. I don't know what model, but it was probably pretty damn nice, because what Sam Benson did is he went to the Wells Fargo branch in Buckhead, Atlanta, Georgia, and withdrew, and had no problem withdrawing, $200,000 in ice-cold cash. I mean, it'd be kind of fun, wouldn't it? Yes, I'd like to withdraw $200,000, please. And you know what? They checked in their computer system, and they gave him the $200,000. And so he goes walking out to his car, where he was quite legally parked, where he is met by Atlanta's finest, who put him on the ground, put guns at his head, and all the time he's screaming, "What did I do?" He's like, "What did I do? What did I do? What did I do?" And the Atlanta PD, meanwhile, and there's a photograph of them, three Atlanta police officers, one of whom has him handcuffed on the ground with his hands handcuffed behind his back and is leaning over him, and the other two cops are sitting there laughing. Mm-hmm. Sam Benson is, meanwhile, yelling, "What did I do? What did I do?" At which point someone says, he told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, a lady was like, "I'm not supposed to have $200,000 on me." I'm like, "I'm a millionaire. How can I not have $200,000 on me?" And, you know, that millionaire part kind of makes me go, well, you know, how broken up am I supposed to be about this? But in point of fact, it's deeply offensive, because I'm pretty sure that the bank manager, because that's what it turns out, the branch manager of this Wells Fargo bank dropped the dime on Sam Benson for withdrawing $200,000 of his own money and taking it to go and buy a car. He explained to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that he had made a decision to purchase a new Mercedes-Benz automobile, and added, "Where I come from, we don't believe in taking checks to the car lot we take cash money. Mm-hmm. And the guy's legit. He was signed to Collective Music Group, which is a music label that was founded by another rapper of whom I am absolutely unfamiliar, by the name of Yo Gotti. And when the Atlanta Journal-Constitution contacted the Atlanta Police Department, the Atlanta Police Department said, we responded to a call at the request of the bank manager, and we responded before we found out that no crime had been committed. And as Ron notes from up in the frozen north, where he says they've had 2 inches of rain yesterday and a flash freeze overnight, he says it's a good thing there were cameras around or he might not have gotten the cash back. It's a good thing there were cameras around or he might be dead. But when I read that quote about where I come from, we don't believe in taking checks to the car lot, we take cash money. Well, that resonated with me. Because in hillbilly culture, where you don't trust the banks, and where people who went through the Depression learned to keep their money, you know, in the mattress or buried in a mason jar out in the yard or several mason jars, what have you. Well, that's not at all unusual. And how did the bank's branch manager, or was it the branch manager? I mean, there are computers involved here, right? I mean, you go into, does anybody cash checks anymore? You go into the bank to cash a check on your own account for $100. May I see your ID? Absolutely. And they check your damned account before they let you have the $100. So it seems pretty obvious to me that they had already checked to make sure that, well, in point of fact, he does have $1 million or so or more dollars in the bank. And so he would be entitled to the $200,000 that he owns. The bank didn't own it. He owned it. He didn't borrow it from them. It was his. But instead, he winds up face down in the parking lot of the bank. In the photograph I see, there are at least two rollers with their lights on that you can see in the background. Handcuffed behind his back with $200,000 just sort of laying there. Now, who's the moron in this? It ain't Sam Benson. It's the Atlanta Police Department. But even more so, it's the bank. Because there is no way that dime gets dropped, there's an antiquated phrase. There's no way that call gets made if dude is white with maybe a sprayed-on tan or maybe a tanning bed orange tan with his hair gassed back and maybe some Ray-Ban aviators or Oakleys or something like that, and he's wearing an Armani suit, and he brings his own briefcase, and they put them, and he walks out, and he doesn't wind up face down with his hands handcuffed behind his back. Oh, hell no. Because we wouldn't do that to a wealthy white man in Merca. The greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever, indivisible, under God. Amen. Hallelujah. Because I think I'm supposed to add hallelujah now. What other explanation for this is there than the simplest and most noxious forms of the racism that continues to bedevil this country but more than bedeviling this country, bedevils a certain percentage, a certain demographic of its citizenry. I mean, I'm even willing to suggest a friendly wager that if it was Cletus the peach farmer coming in with shit on his shoes in his overalls and his flannel shirt, he wouldn't have wound up face down either. No, apparently, Sam Benson was wearing a pair of jeans and a typical white cotton tank t-shirt and what appears to maybe be a hoodie. Later on, he tweeted, all caps, look at how they treat a young, rich nigga, N-I-G-G-A, #CMG. Collective Music Group. Didn't have my glasses on for a minute. I thought it was OMG, but no. No. I see no other explanation for this than pure unmitigated racism on the part of Wells Fargo, aided and abetted by the Atlanta Police Department. Wonder how many actual crimes took place in and around the area. Well, maybe none. I wonder how many speeders got away with it heading down Peachtree Street. Mm-hmm. But what's amazing is the photograph when you see from Black Youngster's Facebook feed. When you see the laughing, grinning police officers, at least one of whom put a gun to his head. I come out the bank, I see the police, I'm walking to my car, I see one of them point to my bag like, him, explained Mr. Benson. They come bum-rushing me at the car, put me on the ground, putting guns, to my head. So, just consider that a dual nomination for, and gee, I can't help but wonder if the risk management department at said Wells Fargo Bank has begun to address this issue, because, see, Mr. Benson only withdrew $200,000 of his own money. But now they're going to arguably owe him significantly more, and they might want to consider just handing him a check and a release. Of course, that'll take care of Wells Fargo's angle. The Atlanta Police Department, well, I don't know. Then again, you got the Supreme Court out there, and hey, they were acting in good faith. Now, weren't they? Mr. Benson sues the Atlanta Police Department. What's their lawyer going to do? He's going to walk in. Your Honor, my clients were acting in the highest of good faith. I mean, goodness gracious sakes alive. If we receive a call saying there's a Negro out there with a bag of $200,000 who might not ought to have that $200,000, Your Honor, we can't let $200,000 just go threatened by random Negroes without checking it out. We had to respond. We had to put him on the ground. We had to put handcuffs on him with his hands behind his back. We had to separate him from the $200,000 because that $200,000, Your Honor, might have been at risk. Remember, the primary purpose of the criminal law and the civil law here in the United States of America, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, under God, indivisible, amen, hallelujah, is to protect the money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe the judge will go, well, let's see, U.S. versus Leon, progeny. Nope. It's completely okay to do that because you, Atlanta Police Department, you three laughing police officers, were acting in good faith. Nice, huh? So that's a start. We got that. Now, what do you say we run over to, because it's, you know, there's just one state between Georgia and North Carolina, Stan, and that's South Carolina, Stan. It's not that much of a drive at all. A new law has gone into effect in North Carolina, Stan. Mm-hmm. That new law says that if you are a woman contemplating exercising sovereignty and control over the reproductive workings of your female body, and if you might happen to have a fetus inside of you, and you decide to go and have the fetus removed, otherwise known as abortion, well, you know, you've got to go through all the business with the waiting period, and you've got to go through the business with the mandatory ultrasound so that you can see the precious little fetuses there. And maybe start, maybe shame you into going through 9 months of pregnancy that you don't want to go through because, well, you're a woman and you really don't have the kind of brains it takes to make that kind of decision. Well, it seems that some women in North Carolina have been going ahead and getting abortions just the same. Up with which right-wingers, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, booger-eaters, libertarians, Republicans, etc., in said state will not put. Well, there's a new wrinkle. North Carolina state law prohibits abortions after 20 weeks, for the most part, minus a couple of minor exceptions. And now, the woman who gets the pre-abortion ultrasound, well, her ultrasound has to be reported to the state government of North Carolina. What happened to that principled right-wing opposition to big government? Because that seems pretty big government-y to me, doesn't it? You try saying it, big government-y. To me, does it to you? Any healthcare provider who performs an abortion after 16 weeks has to send the ultrasound images taken to the Department of Health and Human Services of the state of North Carolina so that officials there can verify the probable gestational age of the fetus. Now, meanwhile, within the legislation as it was passed, is that now the purposes of this are for statistical purposes only. And the patients' and doctors' names will be kept confidential. Yeah, until Sweet Granny McCutcheon gets or the North Carolina equivalent of Sweet Granny McCutcheon, McCracken, McCluckin, McCookin, gets hold of it and puts it on a poster that she can wave in front of some woman's face at a clinic in Raleigh. I don't think Thelma Lou is going to like this at all. But that's reality, and that's the law now. And the idea that the doctors and the patient's name are going to be kept confidential, confidential to whom? Somebody gets to review it. Somebody gets to know the names are there. Because, see, if you are gathering for statistical purposes only, and correct me if I'm wrong, you don't need anybody's name. You don't need the doctor's name. You just attach it to the email file and click and send and gone and goodbye. Tammy Fitzgerald, who is an anti-women's healthcare activist, was a big one who helped push this thing through. And she said, it's necessary to prevent doctors from lying about gestational age to skirt existing abortion limits. Now, what's interesting is that there's absolutely no data whatsoever. There's not a single shred of evidence to suggest that any doctors have skirted the existing abortion limits. Because, of course, there aren't any. Because Tammy Fitzgerald is a, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, liar. Mm-hmm. Yes. Garrick Brenner of Progress NC Action says the law is a creepy scheme and says it reminds, it's reminiscent of something out of George Orwell's 1984. And by the way, all this comes on top of the fact that the waiting period for an abortion in North Carolina, Stan, is now 72 hours. That waiting period is the longest in the entire United States. So, hey, congratulations, Tammy Fitzgerald. You've probably never received a More In Monday nomination. Keep at it, sister. We'll probably get back to you. Jesus. Now, you know, what we're concerned about is these tramps, these sluts that are having their abortions. And what we plan next year is to plan for them to be forced in the name of statistical evidence gathering. We're going to make them put a sign in their yard with a big scarlet A on it and their name underneath it. And see, that A can stand for either adulterous or abortionist. It ain't nothing creepy about it at all. We're just trying to protect little fetuses. Yes. Carol Baker tells me Missouri has a 72-hour wait, too. Isn't it just a delight to realize that we live in a country in which the small government that the Republican Party so loves has made the determination that a woman who has already made the choice, made the decision to terminate a pregnancy, needs to wait just a little bit while longer. And yet, at the same time, we can't ask gun buyers to do the same thing, even though that's a constitutional right, just like getting an abortion is. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know. Oh, that's just evil. Robert up in Morgantown says, it's the abortion discount double check. Sweet Jeebus. Now, understand, though, y'all need to understand that where abortions are concerned, we got to keep the ignorant, stupid slut women from getting themselves all worked up and having an abortion just right off the bat, because you know that could kill a person. That person being the little bitty itsy bitsy precious little God love snowflake fetuses. However, if somebody needs killing real quick, like 5 minutes ago, well, as long as that's not a fetus, well, that's what needs to happen. They need killing. Because there's just some people in this here country needs a killing. Mm-hmm. And I've got the entirely wrong accent for this because the story actually comes out of Ohio, a home of many, many, many lawful, awful gun owners. And you, of course, know what makes the difference between lawful and awful. Mm-hmm. It was Saturday when a gun show opened up somewhere in Ohio. Of course, there's probably a gun show going on a Saturday just about anywhere in Ohio. I didn't realize. I knew there was a Wilmington, Delaware. I knew there was a Wilmington, North Carolina. I didn't know there was a Wilmington, Ohio, but there is. How do we know? Because somebody got, and maybe somebody's, got Second Amendmented there this past Saturday. It was the Ohio Gun Collectors Association show at the Roberts Century, C-E-N-T-R-E, Century in Wilmington. Wilmington is apparently in Clinton County. The story from the Wilmington News Journal reads simply, Colonel Brian Prickett of the... Yes, thank you, Goddess of Irony. Colonel Brian Prickett of the Clinton County Sheriff's Office said one man was injured when there was... And then we... Because, see, we have to move over... we've got to kind of camp out in the passive voice for this. When one... when there was an accidental discharge of a gun... And another person may also have been struck. He believed that any injuries were not life-threatening ones. Well, thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers. Prickett said more details may be available later. He also stated that the organization running the gun show is a top-notch one that is, and those are quotes, top-notch, that is very safety-conscious, and normally the only loaded guns at the show are ours, because sheriff's deputies work the shows for a little extra scratch. He said that to his knowledge, the gun show is continuing today, and of course today was Sunday. Couldn't even shut down the gun show after a couple of people got Second Amendmented. Yep, sorry. I mean, if two was all that got hurt. Maybe it was three, they're not sure. But again, Colonel Brian Prickett, well, he believes, because, well, when it comes to firearms injury, who wants to know, really? The NRA doesn't want to know. They don't want, no, we don't need to know. We don't need to know how many people are accidentally shot, negligently shot, intentionally shot, maimed, killed, wounded, winged, clipped, flesh wounded. Come back, I'll bite your fucking head off. Right, no. No, we believe the injuries are not life-threatening. Yes. Now, on the other hand, had there been a fetus involved... Nope, sorry, the fetuses don't count either. You know, that's the one place where fetuses don't get any truck. Fetuses get absolutely no consideration whatsoever when it comes to maintaining statistics for that sort of thing. For instance, if a fetus grows to full term and then emerges from the birth canal of the mama and is then taken home, the NRA has an absolute purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy if anybody tries to find out whether or not mommy and daddy are, you know, Second Amendmenters. And have a house full of guns, you know, like Mr. and Mrs. Lanza did until they split up and Mr. Lanza went off to Manhattan and left all the guns there at home in Connecticut with Mother Lanza the hoarder, so she could take little Adam with her to the gun range to help him work out his aggressions by putting a few hundred rounds through an AK-47 or an AR-15, you know, Uzi. It probably had all of those. Up with that, the NRA will not put, no. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful story, isn't it? And once again, I will go out on a limb and suggest at 18 minutes past the hour that I am the only person, because Tom Barr of Civitas Media didn't ask the question in his news reporting. I am the only person asking the question in the world today, who's going to pay the medical bills of the people who were shot? One that they know of may have been a second one. I mean, who's counting? And, well, I mean, never mind who's going to pay the bill. We believe the injuries were non-life-threatening, because believing, since... I probably better not ask. Oh, why not? Go ahead and ask it, Bob. Since when do police operate on beliefs? Oh, wait. See Sam Benson. Mm-hmm. They believed that a Negro had money that the Negro was not entitled to. But... Marco. I don't have the energy to reach over to the reverb. Ohio native Steve in New York says. There's a very good Quaker college in Wilmington, Ohio, and the Bengals practice there, at least they used to. Steve says, I blame anything bad that happens there on the Bengals. Dear God, that game. I mean, I'm nominally a Steelers fan because I went to college among a bunch of Steelers fans, and if I wanted to live to graduate, I had to become one too. And it got kind of fun to be a few. And this was even when they kind of sucked. But, oh, my God. You know, Adam Pac-Man Jones actually allegedly went to the West Virginia University, my alma mater. And he constantly got flagged for, you know, playing like a punk. And he got drafted by the Tennessee Titans. Didn't last a real long time there either. Got picked up by the Dallas Cowboys against better advice, and somewhere along the way became a Bengal. And come last weekend, he bungled in a big way, and then put a profanity-laced rant on social media about the officials who threw the flag on him that moved the ball the next 15 yards that allowed the Steelers to have a chip shot field goal and win the game. Yeah, right. Where does this fit in with firearms? Ah, Ohio. Ohio. Mm-hmm. But I am. It's 21 past the hour, and I'm still the only person who asks with these negligent shooting cases. Not intentional, negligent shooting cases. Who's going to cover that bill? Not that I'm obsessed with money, but because I can imagine that and there's some imagining, there's some believing involved, you know, but if Colonel Brian Prickett of the Clinton County Sheriff's Office can do some believing, I can believe too. Who am I kidding? I don't believe worth a damn. I believe that when they roll you into, or maybe they carry you, I don't know, but when they bring you into the emergency room with a gunshot wound, if you are coherent, mostly what you say is, make the pain stop. If you're not screaming, save my life, please save my life, please, please, please don't let me die, please save my life. And I know a little bit about this. I don't know as much as I'd like to. Maybe I should research this someday. They don't just write the bill off, do they? Got any hospital administrators out there in the Horn Family Community Congregation? Okay. We've got a gunshot wound to the abdomen here. We got 5 hours of life-saving surgery. Two days in ICU. Got a week in a semi-private room. We're just going to write that off. And I'm sure the surgeon just writes it off, right? And the nurses all write it off. And maybe there's some physical therapy afterward, and that just gets written off. No. No, it doesn't. You know, I realized what it was that triggered me to start thinking about this. One of the most harrowing images, and I can still see it. I don't even have to try. Yeah, Devin tells me, mostly it's just grunting when they bring the gunshot victims in. I can agree. Steve says, you and I are not obsessed with money. We are obsessed with the rich corporations and right-wingers being accountable instead of hearing them talk about accountability. Yeah. But at an all too young age, I was curious, and I accidentally saw the photograph of my brother being wheeled into Grady Hospital in Atlanta with his head turned to one side and his brains coming out of it. And I don't think they wrote that bill off. I think that probably got billed to my father's insurance. But again, this is not about obsessing over money. This is about asking about the consequences of our sickness with firearms. And see, this is one of those that if you were to ask Larry Pratt of Gun Goobers of America, or if, God forbid, I was to actually allow Wayne LaPierre to share time with me on this program, neither one of those freaks can answer this. Ted fucking Nugent can't answer this question. If we dug up cold, dead Charlton Heston, he couldn't answer this question. Hey, who footed the bill? Just a question. Who footed the bill when Monsieur Hinckley plugged St. Ronnie a couple of times? Okay, this is really weird. The mixer is behaving very strangely. You know, you probably just heard the change in the audio. Well, the question as to who paid for it when Hinckley plugged Ronnie, the answer is we the people. Because, of course, we pay for our elected officials to have the very best health care that money can buy here in Merca, as it should be. Now, do I think that a guy who changes oil down at the Jiffy Lube should have access to the same quality of health care? You're goddamn right I do. Do I think Tina, who cuts hair up to the curling style, deserves access to the same quality of health care as the President of the United States of America? You're goddamn right I do. But the fact of the matter is, Ronnie Reagan got the best health care available in America, and we the people picked up the tab, and some of us not so much, gladly so. Granted, there are probably people who would have said, no, really, let him lay there. And insofar as I'm a jerk, I'm probably one of them. I seem to recall getting thrown out of government class or maybe economics or something. No, that was too late. They threw me out of class for something else. Maybe it was a college class I got thrown out of for standing up and cheering. Hell, well. Youthful indiscretions, right? But one of these days, and you know, I should stop talking about it, and I should just go do it. I should find out, because especially when it's not a crime. Okay, most states, if not all states, have crime victims compensation funds. And so you can go through a long and tormented court process to at least get your hospital bills paid. I mean, it won't take care of your pain, your suffering, your anguish, your mental anguish, your loss of consortium, your loss of capacity to enjoy life, your loss of ability to make weight, earn money. But it'll take care of the hospital bills after you've ridden through a long and miserable litigation process within state government. But what about when it's not a crime, like here in Ohio? In Wilmington, Ohio, a lovely Quaker town, I'm told. Because this country still has millions of people who have no coverage. And insurance companies are not exactly well known for reaching out and saying, no, y'all just let us handle this. Anybody who's had that cup of coffee in law school knows about things like third-party practice and subrogation. Mm-hmm. Ohio. Hey, somebody remind me to go find the answer to that. Wouldn't be a bad idea at all. Yeah, let's see, some messages coming in. Jennifer, down in Australia, in regard to the trampy slut women who want to take care of their own insides without having anybody making the decisions for her. Jennifer says, could the tramp say report on a More and Monday tell them, I'm not sure if and I'm pregnant, but I plan to have sex tonight and wanted to get a jump on that 72-hour countdown. Free ultrasounds for everybody. Yay. By the way, in regard to Mr. Benson, Ron in Canada says, apparently $100,000 of it was confiscated, according to Vibe, and he was told he could come down to the police station later after it was processed as evidence. The most pissed off dude was probably the salesman at the Benz dealership who gets to gets the commission late, you know, or never. Oh, okay, the audio glitch has you sounding especially mellifluous. Oh, I do love being mellifluous. So they let him keep $100,000, but oh, Jesus. So he's going to have to litigate that. That's going to be ever so much fun. Oof. Oh, let's see. Let me check in on over with the email. Mike in Cascadia on Twitter, and a November enrollee to the 400 Club that's not quite reached 100 yet. You know, we're still working on that. One of these days, we're going to have 400 people at $10 a month, and I never have to say anything about fundraising ever again. Mike writes, I'm on an iPhone in an airport, so this email might not be written perfectly. That's okay. I'm often not on iPhones or in airports, and my emails are often right, so no criticism here. Cutting to the chase, and the subject line, by the way, was Bundy seditionists. Mm-hmm. Cutting to the chase, I hate these Bundy fuckers. Hate them. Like you, I'm totally nonviolent, but I bow down to my human base. Obama needs to drone these assholes now. If Obama doesn't act, they will do this at other remote federal domains around the West, like in Utah, at Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. The right wing in Utah hates that monument that Bill Clinton created. I've hiked through Grand Staircase, magnificent area, red rock, slot canyons, clean air, huge vistas, but also fucking cows everywhere. So it's not like these ranchers are locked out of our land. Across the West, cows are everywhere on federal lands. I think they have the run of 60-something percent of millions upon millions of acres. I think you're right. Now, last year, continues Mike, a cow got stuck in a slot canyon in Grand Staircase Escalante. Ranchers fouled the place by riding to the area in their ATVs, which are supposed to be prohibited. Then they messed up the canyon by trying to burn the dead cow carcass. Now, that's not burning the carcass, Mike. That's called barbecue. Self-entitled assholes think they have the run of our land. Edward Abbey was right in calling ranchers welfare parasites and cows hooved locusts. If malheur succeeds, it will happen again. Our public federal lands are at risk. The idea of federal lands is at risk. They're shitting on Teddy Roosevelt's legacy. Malheur is remote and not on most bucket lists. If they get away with this, they'll move up the scale to more popular visited areas. Denouement is Yellowstone, owned by Disney, and Grand Canyon by the Kochs. That is what they want, and it damn sure is. And by the way, we have a new word for these rotten sons of bitches out in their little seditious sit-in. I saw this on Carol Baker's feed over the weekend, and in regard to the Hee-Haw Caliphate. Patriots. It's a beautiful thing. PATRIDIOTS. Patriots. Learn it. Use it. Patriots. Mike continues, another issue with this is that any Fed employee like Bureau of Land Management and Forest Service is in danger from these armed psychopaths. Another issue, Bundy has gone so far as to set up a shadow government in Harney County. They call it the Harney County Safety Committee. This storify from Michael Oman Reagan describes it well. If Obama doesn't shut this down now, these terrorists will do this again. I guarantee it. You're great, Bob. Thanks for what you do. Thank you, Mike. And thank you. Thank you for the link, and thank you for the observations. Thank you for being part of the community. Thank you for helping to keep it all going. And in point of fact, we've got more on the Patriots because they're drawing, well, like, you know, like flies to a warm, steamy pile of shit. They're drawing other Patriots to them. Do you remember Michelle Fiore? This is the woman with the bogus. What was it, the bleach enema cancer cure? Well, she's a teabagger. Probably a birther. She's Islamophobic. And she believes that we not only need to stop abortion, we need to figure out a way for maybe some fetus-loving microsurgeon to put a little teeny-tiny working firearm in the hands of every fetus up in the womb so they can shoot their way out if they have to. Well, she got on the phone on a conference call because she just couldn't make it up to the bird sanctuary. But six repig-licking members of various legislatures actually went there and were allowed to proceed and go on to the nature preserve and to go and meet with the Hee-Haw Caliphate. Jesus effing Christ. Oregon State Representative Dallas Hurd in the Oregonian reporting brought a group of legislators from out of state to have a sit down with Amen Bundy and some of the other armed seditionists who are presently occupying and doing damage now to the federal installation. You know, the installation that belongs to us, you, me, we, the people. They have gone so far now, Bundy and company, the Snack Posse, they've renamed the bird sanctuary to the Harney County Resource Center, and they have started tearing down fences. Now, there's some importance to that, because at the very least, under, I'm guessing, Oregon state law, that would be destruction of property. Now, if it's your fence on your land and you want to tear it down, get right to it. But if it's somebody else's fence, that's destruction of property. In some cases, there are even statutes that speak to destruction of things that serve the purpose, you know, even trees, of being land boundaries. Mm-hmm. Well, they're tearing down fences at Malheur. And Bundy says that he and his fellow seditionists have gone so far as to rifle through federal files. You know, files belonging to you, me, us, we, the people, out there trying to make that more perfect union. He's gone through them. I saw that just as I came through the door. Sparky made me aware of that. Jesus. But meanwhile, Dallas Hurd from Roseburg, Oregon, brought in a group of weirdos. Representative Graham Hunt and Matt Shea of Washington, Representative Judy Boyle, Representative Heather Scott, and Representative Sage Dixon of Idaho, and State Representative Miel Fiore of Nevada took part in the meeting by phone. They went to the bird sanctuary. And law enforcement officials said, we advise you not to do this. to which these six birther, deather, bagger, tenther, ninther, deather, booger eaters said, fuck you. And Michelle Fiore, a pig licking from Nevada who just couldn't make the trip but did appear on telephone, said, it's refreshing to see a representative like Dallas Hurd care and lean on the side of citizens versus our federal government. You stupid! Because, see, we really are. We're the government. We the people. And to the extent that a majority of the people of the United States like having national parks, and the audio just changed again, these people aren't even operating according to democratic rule, if we ever even had democracy in the United States. These are insurrectionists. These are insurgents. And yes, they have now declared themselves to be the Harney County Committee of Safety. And the freaks who went out there called it a fact-finding mission. Representative Cliff Bentz, who incidentally is also a Republican from Oregon, said, Representative Hurd had called me and indicated he was heading in that direction, and I indicated that it was inappropriate. I think it's fair to say I was not enthusiastic about the idea. But this is the part that just absolutely rocks me. The visit was strongly criticized by law enforcement. Law enforcement requested the legislators that they stay away from the bird sanctuary. And as noted, the answer was to fuck off. Now, what happens to you? Hell's bells, down in Mexico, what happened to Justin freaking Bieber when he decided to go tramping around some Mayan ruins that had a please do not enter sign? Well, he was asked to leave. What happens to you, me, us, we? What happened to a progressive or a liberal or whatever we were calling ourselves back then? And this happened in South Carolina, Stan, back during the Reign of Error, when a man refused to be relegated to the free speech zone. His ass was arrested and his ass was prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Ta-da. But not to these. Not to these right-wing turds. No, they're being handled with kid gloves. They're being treated as if somehow they are in some degree aggrieved. Meanwhile, as the angry Indian reminds me, a member of the T-Rump campaign has gone on a junket to the bird sanctuary. Jerry DeLimas is a leader of Veterans for Trump, and he's the husband of Representative Susan DeLimas. DeLimas, who knows? Well, he went on up to Mal-Ur in Burns. No consequences for him either. Meanwhile, Michelle Fiore, who believes in bleach enemas, fun, said, we just need to get elected officials from the sheriff's office on up protecting citizens. I stand for our citizens, and they need help from elected officials. Well, sister, how about the citizens who don't agree with invading and occupying and destroying and wrecking federal property that belongs to all of us? See, that's the breakout right there. That's the breakdown. these privileged patriots think that whatever they declare to be theirs is theirs, and as long as they've got a gun to back it up, well, that's okay. Meanwhile, in Harney County, Judge Stephen Grasty said, "I find it really interesting that not only did law enforcement advise him not to go out there, it seems to me that we now have a state representative who will not listen to local input. Isn't that the same thing that our armed visitors are saying about the federal government? It is the same thing." Now, I wish, one of those things, if I had a research staff, maybe we'd figure these sorts of things out. I wish I knew, which district of Oregon that is for purposes of the U.S. attorney. And B, do they just have a grand jury meeting all the time, or do they just call them periodically? If it's just periodically, when does the next one meet? And when are these sorry, putrid, rotten, ignorant, stupid, dead from the neck up patriots gonna be indicted? Oh, there's the audio changing again. What in the sweet name of is going on here? Why isn't there a cordon? Why isn't there somebody to stop these ignorant bagger legislators from going and providing aid and comfort to a group which are engaged in what they themselves describe as warfare against the people of the United States? Anybody? Bueller? Now, this clip goes back about a week. Oh, by the way, just a little fun fact. It's the 11th day of January, 2016. And this would have been the 122nd birthday of my grandmother. She and my grandfather were born literally a week apart. He was a week older than she. And what amazing people they both were. But this story goes back to last week, because see, this godforsaken bit of ignorance in Burns, outside of Burns, in Harney County, has been allowed to go on for that long now. And, well, we haven't run this clip yet, so why the hell not? It's not that long. Get the hockey puck out. You'll be wanting it. But early on, as of a week ago today, there was Alex Jones declaring that this could be the beginning. And the audio just changed again. God damn it. Declaring that this could be the beginning of the Civil War. You ready for this? Sure, why not?
This is the main push to get our guns. And folks, with this new situation out in Oregon, we do not want to do any favors for Obama that gives him the background to come after the guns and legitimize what he's doing. And he's doing this with executive power. This is really about the executive power grab, so that in a few months, the word is, they're going to have even more draconian executive actions on guns.
Well, you know what? If this is an executive power grab, I hate to say it, but I mean, this is one of those meme things that you see on Facebook and Twitter and stuff. Executive power grab, you're doing it wrong. Jesus. Because it's not very, I mean, these guys have been out there for, you know, over a week now, untouched, unmolested, free to bring in lots of cans of raviolios and spaghetti and meatball cans and who knows, Spam and maybe some dried fruit, and yeah, those combos, the pretzely ones, not the cracker ones that look like dog treats, the nacho pretzel ones that they like. Yeah, right. Executive power grab.
They're coming for our guns.
Not very well.
So this is the opening salvo, and I break down the fact that absolutely the feds are stealing land, absolutely they're out of control, absolutely they're lawless.
Yeah, that's his bumper music. No, they're not stealing land. No, they're not out of control. No, they're not lawless. But again, Alex Jones needs a Thorazine dart in the neck. But the problem isn't Alex Jones. It's the people that he deliberately incites to this kind of behavior.
Absolutely, under the Declaration of Independence, you should be able to, you know, stand up to this. I get what these people are doing, but you have a wide open building with saying, come from all over the country, no matter who you are, guaranteed provocateurs are showing up and other things are happening. The whole Soros group is saying, here are our white terrorists, here are our cowboy hat wearing terrorists. It gives them the backdrop they need. They want to start a civil war.
Yeah, I resent being referred to as a member of the Soros group until such time as I get to cash a really big check from SAME. I mean, six digits, okay? I want to support this little broadcast effort. $10 at a time by 400 people. Absolutely. And thank you. Thank you, Randy. We've got a new, a different Randy, a new Randy and a new subscriber. Thank you very, very kindly. But when it comes to that Soros money, oh, hell no. No. We're going to have a real nice studio. Agnes is going to have a glass. I'm going to have a booth, and it's going to be soundproofed, and microphones that don't come in and out and do weird crap, and she's going to have a talkback mic and cameras, and I'll be able to walk around, and it'll all be solar powered, and bupkis, because I guess. Well, whatever his group believes in, supporting progressive broadcasting ain't one of them. So that's not the only
Alex Jones
clip. No. We've got a second one. And you notice that
Alex Jones
was all worried about the fact that it's open and it's easy to attack. And members of the indigenous community, how long did it take before the blood started running at Wounded Knee in 1973? And didn't the FBI kind of create a tight little cordon around that protest that started out peacefully enough? Yeah. But, you know, just, oh, well. But there's a larger point that
Alex Jones
was trying to make. Here it is.
So I admire these folks, but at the same time, you don't just mindlessly then support the next operation without saying, my First Amendment right, hey, this is the day Obama launches the gun grab. Hey, this is what they keep telling the local police and sheriff's departments is going to happen and why they're giving them armored vehicles. Hey, we should think for ourselves here. Hey, is this the best timing? Because you're not wanted by the local. This whole, and you've seen in Oregon, sheriffs saying, get ready for the war with the Patriots.
Yeah, see, there's only one problem there. All those tanks and all those anti-personnel and the snipers and all of that stuff, the armor, and yeah, that wasn't designed for the Patriots. Because they can be, until recently, they could be relied on to subserviently and obsequiously hew the government line. That is, you know, until that one got into their White House, the Kenyan Muslim usurper. All that crap was brought in for peaceful protesters. All that crap was brought in for people of color. And I think that point is made obvious by the fact that it has goddamn well not been brought in with all these white folks. Sorry, no. Yeah, give me a minute here. Well, shoot. But Alex Jones has more. We'll get through this.
The last few years and all this provocateuring. I'm telling you, folks. I'm telling you. There's agitation going on, 110%, just like with the Black Lives Matter. And notice Black Lives Matter went into action yesterday, saying, this is white terror. Time to take the guns. The militias are coming. We want the National Guard. We want war. We want this to happen. This is to change the subject from Obama offensively coming to get our guns and trying to blame San Bernardino on patriots to then flip it and say, see, there's an armed takeover of a federal building right now. We got to do something. So I'm telling you, the timing is out of control, and I understand there's been demonstrations going on there for years, and then magically, this happened at this point. I mean, folks, Papa didn't, Mama didn't raise a fool, and I don't think the Bundys are bad. I don't think most militia people are bad.
Wait, is he talking about himself? No, Mama and Papa Jones raised a patriot.
I don't think any of these folks are bad, except for some of the things that are being said and pushed that overall basically gets this situation out of control, out of control. And those of us that are seeking to try to fix this peacefully know that in 1995, a whole bunch of state houses were moving in 94 and 95 to get us out of the UN, to take the private property back, to abolish the BLM, to kick them off land. We had 20-plus states. Patriots, remember this. We had 20-plus states that had voted to basically control the federal government and stop the U.N. takeover.
Yeah, but there's only one problem here, Alex, and that's this. There are even more right-wing-controlled states now than there were then. Really. But facts never get in Alex Jones's way. Gerald pointing out, I just wish that Alex Jones would learn how our government actually works instead of spouting off shit that only the ignorant believe to be true. But it's not like he doesn't know. This man has enough intelligence to understand. But as this program can prove, where's the money in that? You make no mistake, Alex Jones is a millionaire off of this stuff. And therein lies your answer. Truly. I'm sorry, I'm looking for something here. Okay, I'll go ahead and give it away. Over the weekend, somebody posted, and I can't bring it to mind right now. Somebody posted a link on my Facebook page to a parody of Warren Zevon's Lawyers, Guns, and Money, and it was probably the hardest I laughed all weekend, and I wanted to share it with you guys. And I can't, it was send something, something in Munchies. If one of y'all knows, or if you have a link, send it to me. I'll play it, because whoever the genius was that came up with this deserves the airplay, without a doubt. All right, just a little bit left of
Alex Jones.
And then a break.
Then Oklahoma City happened. We've got multiple governors like Greg Abbott coming out over the weekend saying, come and take it. The state will stand against you trying to take guns. We've got sheriffs and police chiefs standing and saying the right thing. We've got police departments saying the right thing. We've got good stuff in Congress. We've got promises in Congress to repeal any of these executive orders immediately and slap them down. We've got Obamacare with the legislation introduced to repeal it, about to pass the House. We have got so many exciting things to happen right now. Donald Trump, the whole nine yards. We are trying to bring the Republic back as best we can, and the Soros types that have done this in countless countries like Ukraine and other areas want civil insurrection. They want civil unrest. They want us fighting with each other at each other's throats, and the feds keep pushing and pushing and pushing to try to trigger this, and that's why I'm calling for everybody to be cool.
Okay. I don't think George Soros is behind the unrest in Ukraine. George Soros knows what a Holocaust looks like, feels like, sounds like, hurts like. And in point of fact, one of the outfits that George Soros does fund is called the Civil Society Institute, if I understand correctly. It is civil society, not incivil society, not civil insurrection. It is civil society that he backs in the hopes that it doesn't devolve into some sort of nightmarish hell land. Gerald asking, yeah, and just how many times has the Obamacare repeal passed the House prior to this? 59? Is it 59 times now? It probably. But Alex Jones sees that this is an opening salvo that could lead to a civil war. And while I have used the phrase cold civil war, no. This is not what starts a civil war. No. Not at all. This is just plain old-fashioned insurrection, insurgency, sedition, treason, plain and simple. Aha, I think we have it. Yes. Wonderful. There it is. Oh, Carol Baker, you are a genius. There it is, there it is, there it is. Ron and Raleigh notes, speaking of Alex Jones, there seems to be no money in being intelligent or presenting cogent ideas. Asshats like Alex Jones are shoveling money into their accounts by the boatload. We are well into the destruction of America as a viable nation. Well, that's their goal. We're gonna live in a patriot wonderland where there's no government and it's nothing but Ayn Randian anarcho-capitalism. And right makes might, or might makes right. Yeah. Steve with a note, guns and Obamacare. As a person who has Obamacare, I don't remember seeing the you can only have health insurance if you give up your right to guns checkbox. Yeah, me neither. Me neither. So we'll take a little break. Hey, the phones are open. Line 1, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn. If we've never established a connection, just send me a request and I'll okay that right away and we'll be chatting away from anywhere on the planet. And then, of course, line 2 is the stress line. 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Okay? And you will. Everybody always loves Warren Zevon when I play him. You're going to love this. You are going to love, love, love this. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, and we'll be back as soon as everybody's done laughing. Rocky Mountain Mike is who posted that on YouTube. If you want to go and find it and listen to it over and over and over again and enjoy the hell out of it some more. Pop-Tarts, Nuts, and Munchies. Pop-Tarts, Nuts, and Munchies. That's almost pitch perfect. It scans, works, yeah. Yeah. So, let's see. I'll get around to that. I'll get around to that. Asa noting, I thought you were going to grace us with some David Bowie during the break, Brother Bob. And I will. Just don't know. I don't know quite which song to play. I mean, This Is Not America and I'm Afraid of America. Those come to mind. Oh, was it you, Texas T? Bob never gives me my props, LOL. Okay, thanks. Thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, Woke up to the David Bowie news this morning, and you know, if I woke up this morning and I'm not trying to be crass here. If I woke up this morning, if I'd awakened this morning to the news that, say, oh, George H.W. Bush had cashed his ticket, well, you just kind of say, yeah, he had a nice run. And you don't feel all busted up. Why, and again, I'm not trying to be crass or not trying to be insensitive. I mean, I saw all kinds of friends on my Facebook page posting messages of real and sincere grief. And it felt like we'd lost somebody. We lost a global citizen. We lost somebody who at least tried. You know, he had his flaws, made some mistakes, repented of them, recanted them, but tried to make the best of the time he had on this planet. I read somewhere much earlier today that his home, where his boyhood home, where he'd been raised in, what, Brixton, had recently sold for in excess of like £1 million. And the New York Times article noted, because the area has become gentrified. When young David Jones, that was his name, was growing up, it was a melting pot working class area. Immigrants, poor to middle class English. You may recall the song on the Clash's London Calling album, "The Guns of Brixton." Yeah, but the area is being gentrified, and so now the boyhood home of David Jones, who would become David Bowie, recently sold in excess of £1 million. And of course, he was David Bowie, not just because David Jones doesn't have a whole lot of oomph to it, but at the time that he was reaching for stardom, David Jones was sort of taken. Davy Jones, lead singer of the Monkees. So Bowie was that's a good name. It apparently worked for him. I thought you might find where'd it go? In terms of remembering David Bowie, I've always loved the music of Peter Gabriel. Carol says, my newsfeed was flooded down to I has sad. I didn't feel that way. He was 69 years old, had all the sex he wanted, did an unbelievable amount of drugs, and lived to be 69. I couldn't get broken up over it. Sorry. He was rich and had a grand life. My friends hailed him as a hero. I think everyday people doing great things that no one sees is pretty fucking heroic, and I agree. Yeah, I think, Carol, what shocked people is that there was nothing out there. There were no posts out there. You know, David Bowie ill. There weren't any National Enquirer articles. There weren't any Weekly World News stopped publishing, but I was going to say no pictures of Robin the Bat Boy with David Bowie. He'll be missed. He was still producing music. But I like what Carol says about ordinary people doing great things that no one sees. And there's tremendous music out there being made that very few people hear. it takes a lot of guts to get up and perform for people. Just this past week, for the first time ever, Ferg borrowed a guitar over at Poetry, Prose, and Plainsong at the Grove at Secret Sandwich and sat there and played a couple of tunes. He'd never done that before. Never played. I mean, I've videoed him playing stuff, but he had never played before, you know, real live, honest-to-goodness human beings who were not his mom and me and who otherwise constituted something we would refer to as an audience. It takes, in many instances, that takes guts. I did like this, though. You know, I've got two votes here coming from Jennifer and Graham. Two votes for Heroes. Hey, by the way, Asa tells me to give it some context, Bob. £1 million for a house anywhere in London is chump change. I'll get you a nice fixer-upper. Oh, so £1 million for a house in London is a cute little burner downer. Is that what I'm to understand? This is beautiful, though. Peter Gabriel put on his Facebook page, Heroes for me was always one of the great Bowie tracks. It is heroism in the face of oppression and desperation. It's something triumphant despite the desperate situation. So maybe this would be nice. Let's do this. Let's take a minute. This is the cover of Heroes, as done by Peter Gabriel, one of my favorite artists. Symphonic in nature, by the way.
Like dolphins can swim, though nothing will keep us together. We can beat them forever and ever. How we can be heroes just for one day. How we can be heroes just for one day.
and the guns shout above our heads, and we kiss as though nothing could fall.
Nice. Nice. Peter Gabriel covering David Bowie's Heroes. And I think that I think the if there's any, well, it sounds to me like the lyrical content of that speaks to, you know, that we can be heroes just for one. It speaks to the same thing Hemingway was talking about with grace, grace in the face of death. And something that I mentioned this earlier, apparently on a digital screen crawling across the locker room of the Cincinnati Bengals all last week was a quote from Paul Brown, the founder and first coach of the Bengals, who said something about the key to winning is poise under great stress. Similar concept, and similarly, one that just didn't quite make it out onto the field with the poor old Bengals. Nope. In Australia, Jennifer says, chills, Bob, chills. It's an unseasonably rainy morning here in this most dry, most isolated part of the world, as if in tribute to a great voice. And trust you to improve the unimprovable. Thanks. I'd never heard this. We, too, adore Peter Gabriel. A lot to love there. Ferg has become enamored of the Peter Gabriel track, The Book of Love. Yeah. 22 past the hour, I just got a cartoon in, Tom Tomorrow's This Modern World. Bob in Texas sent it along. Gary Trudeau can't touch him anymore. Is there a better visual satirist than Tom Tomorrow? Junior Militiaman Anti-Government Playset. Hey kids, it's all new. And of course, a little boy, sort of Opie Taylor looking-ish. Comes complete with real working firearms. Look out, everyone. I'm a good guy with a gun. At least until somebody does something I don't like. Warning. Exercise of Second Amendment rights in presence of police may be hazardous to the health of non-Caucasians. Also includes genuine-looking camouflage, just like real soldiers wear.
The forces of tyranny will never see me coming now. It probably looks like this gun is just floating in midair.
And, of course, back behind him, he's got the urine-colored snake flag. Don't read to me. Empty box converts into occupiable government building.
I will not budge until liberty has been restored. Now back off, jackbooted thugs.
Cardboard box has been labeled visitor center. Suddenly, a little blonde girl enters the frame. You'll have hours of fun issuing statements to the media.
The Founding Fathers intended Western cattle ranchers in the 21st century to have free grazing rights on public lands. And for kids to get all the ice cream they want.
And that's why the little girl says,
interesting, tell me more.
But don't forget to pack an extra lunch or you might have to put out an urgent call for assistance.
Mom, I need some snacks. Hello?
Order your playset and start defending freedom today. Manufacturer accepts no liability for any death, injury, or public humiliation that may occur. But particularly the death or injury part. Because, well, you'll have a damned fine time in court trying to prove that and get your damages. Right. Baggers. Birthers, deathers, tenthers, ninthers, deathers, booger eaters. I mean, it's become, over the course of the last few years, a bit of a little litany. But damn, it's real. These people who so blithely go about the business of trying to define our freedom in terms of its subservience to theirs are a genuine threat. A genuine threat to the United States going forward. Of course, we're empire. We know we're empire. We know the empire is crumbling, and there's no way to really bring it back. On the other hand, however, the Angry Indian provided me with this link. Trump says he could end Oregon militia takeover with a phone call. I think what I'd do as president is I would make a phone call to whoever, to the group, Trump said in an interview with the New York Times editorial board published in part on Thursday. Trump said that he would not necessarily resort to military action in order to remove the militia from the Oregon refuge, but he told the Times that at a certain point you have to do something and you have to be firm and you have to be strong. You have to be a government. Yeah, okay. But, you know, he could do it with a phone call. What's interesting, though, is if he could do it as president with a phone call, what is it that, what power would he have as the president that he doesn't have as Donald J. Trump, billionaire, who owns a mansion and a yacht? Because the only real power that he would enjoy would be the power to order military intervention. You know, call out the National Guard, something like that. So barring that, since he's so awesomely, he's awesomely Trump. Why not pick up the phone and call him and say, hey, you're making us look bad. Well, you know why? Because most of his supporters support what the Patriots, the Hee-Haw Caliphate, are doing. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm just going to mention this, 28 past the hour. We do try to raise money every evening. Not a nickel has rolled in, just saying. Okay, we got to go here. There's audio. I mean, you just can't walk away from this kind of thing. We have to back up a little bit to something that happened last week. The man that Charlie Pierce refers to as Human Bowling Jacket, Maine Governor Paul LePage, who is another of that bizarre cadre of right-wing weirdos who were swept into various governors' mansions in the last election. He said, he said that drug dealers with name, and these, this is a quote, names like, quote, D-Money, Smoothie, Shifty, were in the habit of coming up to Maine to sell some drugs and then, and again, this is a quote, impregnate a young white girl and then leave the state. He is apparently not at all concerned with drug dealers impregnating young brown or black or tan girls, no. So then, bear with me. It's going to take a little work. So then, when people responded to this thug, and Paul LePage is a nasty thug. There's an unnasty thug. He's a nasty thug. And he treats politics not as a civil process, but some sort of schoolyard bully game. But he really said that out-of-state drug dealers come in to often impregnate young white girls in Maine. When that happened, Hillary Clinton's team immediately jumped on it and condemned him. And then Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the DNC demanded that Chris Christie, for some reason, renounce what he said. I don't know why they didn't call on Trump to renounce it, or Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American, to do so, or Marco Rubio, or Rand Paul and that thing in his head. Yeah, really, I don't. But having a conniption about the drug crisis in this country. Well, it's become the conniption du jour because it's a real problem in some places. Let's see if we can round up the actual audio of this. Here we go.
Guys of the name D Money, Smoothie, Shifty, these type of guys that come from Connecticut, New York. They come up here, they sell their heroin, then they go back home. Incidentally, half the time they impregnate a young white girl before they leave. Which is a real sad thing, because then we have another issue that we've got to deal with down the road.
Really? What's that other issue? Well, we got your half-breed baby there. So, this guy being a thug, though, he's not one to back down. No. Instead, he said that he blamed it on the fact that, I guess, that he doesn't ad-lib well. Is that how we put it? Let's see.
You know, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Rocky, but one of the movies of Rocky, he has a quote in there, and I'll just sort of paraphrase it. Yous don't like me, and I don't like you. And I'm going to tell you, I sincerely mean that on this basis. I spent an hour and 15 minutes talking to the people in Bridgeton the other night about some of the problems in Maine. And that whole time, many of you were there. That whole time, I made one slip up. I made one word of slip up. I might have made many slip ups. I was going impromptu, and my brain didn't catch up to my mouth.
In other words, he is naturally racist. And the filter that he would use to catch his racism doesn't work quite as fast when he doesn't have a script in front of him. His default position is to go racist. And, of course, it was the media's fault. Media's faults. For reporting on what he said. It was the faults of the media for not ignoring him or not pretending that he didn't say it? Yeah, okay. Now, he did back down insofar as he said, since Maine is 95% white, I should have said they impregnate a Maine woman and not white woman. But then he got all wounded and said, you guys aren't paying attention to the drug problem, and that's what I was talking about. Hey, so there's not a lot of people out there defending LePage. No. But by God, there's one person. A guy by the name of David Duke, Klansman, came rushing to his defense. He's got a radio program, David Duke does. And he not only defended Paul LePage, he praised them. David Duke said, "You're probably picking yourself off the floor to think that an elected governor in the United States of America would actually talk about this horrible destruction and defilement of young white women. These are not Anglo-Saxon guys from rural Maine doing this. They are, again, like the Puff Diddies, or whatever they want to call themselves, from New York." It really... Now, Harry in Baltimore just let me know that as of Sunday, the Portland Press Herald is reporting that a bill of impeachment would be introduced against LePage on this coming Thursday. And they're going to introduce a measure Thursday to investigate 8 possible charges against him. There are 9 co-sponsors of the legislation. And one of the 9 co-sponsors is an independent, neither a Democrat nor Republican. And he said, there is nothing that anyone can do to stop this process. We follow the law and the Constitution. Yeah, it's a start. Yeah. Because, well, I mean, yeah, we know how it goes. They roll up to Maine and they jump out and it's Cleavon Little and he says, "Where are the white women at?" But I'm sure Paul LePage will feel ever so gratified to have been so thoroughly defended by a Klansman. Then again, maybe he really will be glad. It's pretty obvious they get it. I don't like you and you don't like me. So that then leads us down to the Old Dominion, Virginia. And thank you, Gerald, for getting us started this evening. Much appreciated indeed. Thank you very kindly. And again, thanks to our subscribers and to Chris, who made it possible for us to just start not in a hole. Thank you. So down in Old Virginia, there's a preacher by the name of Jim Hill, and he hosts something called What Does the Bible Plainly Say? Well, unless you're reading it in Hebrew or Koine Greek, it doesn't plainly say anything, because it's been through about 19 different translations, including the King James, which, while lovely in its execution, is not exactly, exact in translation. Sea of Reeds, Red Sea, Young Girl, Virgin, what have you. This guy's a real Lulu. Let's just check in with him and find out what the Bible plainly says about Mirka. Because remember last week, apparently, the book of Amos plainly talks about implied aircraft.
If you've got a good marriage, you can't buy that. You can't order that. You can't recover that. Don't let it get away.
They ain't got none on Amazon.
God ordained male and female, not male and male and female and female. He said Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve.
You got that, Steve? Up in New York, Steve? Please, I hope you're not dating anybody named Adam. Yeah, now, Bill, George, Harold, Yngwie, that's okay. No Adams for you, Steve. Just making sure. Yeah. Never mind the fact that that's the most pathetically tired, but this dude is pathetically tired and old. I highly suggest that you look him up, Pastor Jim Hill. It ain't often you see a rug like this anywhere. And this is, of course, the downside to radio, the fact that we can't share video. And it of course, and I played this the other night, and why not play it again? Because Jim Hill is the poster child for it.
Budweiser presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Really Bad Toupee Wearer.
Mr. Really Bad Toupee Wearer.
More than any neon sign or exploding scoreboard ever could, your chrome dome cover says, "Hey guys, look at me."
What could you be thinking?
You think it looks natural, but it couldn't look phonier if it had a chin strap.
I look at you.
Made of space-age fibers, it can repel anything. Rain, wind, snow, and especially young women.
I don't think so.
So crack open an ice-cold Budweiser, Mr. Stud in a Rug. Then crack open another for that thing on your head.
I don't think it's on straight.
God, I love that. I don't think it's on straight. Yeah. So anyway, no Adams and Steve, okay?
He means a man and a woman makes up the marriage, and the children make up the home. And the Bible says, blessed is the man that has his quiver full of them, because children are a heritage from the Lord. Let us go and make a family unit once again. Let's make it like it's supposed to be. Where do we go from here? Gather your family together. Husband, wives, sit down and agree. Let's take our family and go to church and serve God together. You know, this past week, I have rejoiced with some people because they had a new baby. You know, it always was that we were...
You know, it's not every day. I don't have the... And most gay men I know don't have the nerve to wear a purple sport coat with a purple dress shirt and a purple and silver striped reptile. Not reptile, reptile. But the children make up the home. And log cabin? I mean, what? Okay, you're in the clear. Steve says his name's Leo, so I'm good. Whew! Yeah. Well, we just don't want you to get in trouble with Brother Hill. And by the way, he's backdropped with an image of a waving American flag. It's mostly blue, white stars, blue background. You see a couple of red and white back there with a Bible laying under it. And I want to take a moment for imagery because that line in the Tom Tomorrow comic that Bob from Texas sent along. Well, there's the reference to the little kid wearing camo. Well, you realize in certain circles in America, camo is actually a color now. Now, I did it. I did it as a joke. Well, not as a joke. I mean, yeah, well, I did it because it made her laugh. And I like to make my darling Agnes laugh. Cold weather has finally found us here. Tonight it'll be down to, oh my Jesus, what? Well, tonight it's just down to 21. Tomorrow night we get 10. And we get some 10s coming up here for the next week or so. It's going to be cold. For a variety of reasons, it's very difficult to keep this house warm. Not having a central heat system is part of that. So we burn a lot of propane, and we use a lot of electric heat, space heaters, that kind of thing. And we also use more conventional means, such as long underwear. I don't know if Agnes is in the bedroom and can hear me or not. I just checked in and hollered to see if she could hear me, and she said, "Yes, dear, I can." And I said, "Well, I'm not trying to shame you or horrify you." And she said, "That's good." But I went and I was just looking for something to, you know, because Agnes gets colder easier than I do. And yes, I bought them because I've joked about them here on the program. Pink camo thermals. And there were also winter white camo thermals in case, I don't know, I could buy her a set in case she decides to run out and hide from me in the snow. But being as how she's not real crazy about snow, I just don't imagine that happening, or needing to, for that matter. And you wouldn't want to do that around here anyway, because we've got neighbors with semi-automatic firearms who might mistake her for a rare albino something, whatever, and, you know, start taking a few pot shots, because, you know, if it moves. Yeah, honey, don't wear the antler hat, okay? Please. Oh, okay. I got to screw you for that one. But I got to thinking about the camo, and it was the comic that Bob sent along that got me going there. Because in the past, and it was always a running gag between Agnes and me, at one point in time there was a sporting goods store that specialized in hunting gear, you know, boots and different kinds of really, really deadly arrows and compound bows and camo clothing for being really, really stealthy and stalky when you're standing up in your tree stand waiting to shoot some unsuspecting deer. But they also had and this is all by the company Realtree. They also had a Realtree, like, camisole and tap panty set, which, you know, really is not going to be much of a help in your deer stalking, even if you're a woman. Now, that's obviously for after the end of the day's hunting, when everybody's all worked up from the bloodletting and the killing and everything, and you can only you got to take care of those urges with a little post hunt. Gerald, by the way, saying, "I don't understand why you don't just burn coal in your fireplace, Bob. Not only does it keep the lights on, you can heat with it too." Well, I'm just not fond of the smell, and besides, the smell tends to cling to space age fibers that go into the making of things like Realtree pink camo long underwear, and Agnes wouldn't like that. But this is the larger question. In the circles of people who enjoy, there's that line in the song long ago from Disney's Beauty and the Beast, where the big nasty guy sings, "I use antlers in all of my decorating." And around here, I mean, it's camo everything everywhere, and much the same in much of Appalachistan and much of Jesus Land too, for that matter. I mean, I don't know. In larger metropolitan areas, say your New York, Chicago, San Francisco, L.A., do people walk around in camo? I don't ask that rhetorically. I really don't know. I mean, they do in Birmingham and Jackson, Mississippi, and Charlotte, North Carolina, and maybe Tallahassee and Columbia and Charleston. Oh yeah, lots of people wearing camo. But camo was designed essentially for the military to make them less visible to the enemy and thus perhaps less shootable. Does it say anything about the militarization of the United States that camo is now a fashion accessory? Just go looking around on the internet, maybe look up camo redneck wedding and see how many pictures pop up. I dare say it will be several. Now, meanwhile, Nikki tells me we're getting the dreaded lake effect snow tonight and the bitter cold and wind. I have tie-dyed thermals I made. Well, of course you... yes. And there are a hell of a lot more people walking around in camo this and camo that than are walking around in tie-dyed anything. And I would simply offer the thesis that, there's a reason for that. And the reason is, in a word, fascism. And right-wingery. Now, once upon a time, the United Mine Workers of America adopted camo as their favorite color back in the early 80s when they were in a series of strikes that ultimately led to pretty much their demise. And at least in Appalachistan, it stuck. But out in Jesus Land in Appalachistan and larger Redneckistan, does the use of camo indicate a propensity toward fascism? And if it doesn't, that's okay. Well, there we go. Nikki telling me on Twitter, my best friend's daughter had a camo wedding. Cracking me up tonight. Oh, yeah. I imagine that, there's nothing that has not been made in camo design. And I've got some. I've worn it. The warmest pair of pants I own are in a camo pattern. Because that was the only thing you could get it in. As to burning coal, Gerald says, well, I mean, hell, your neighbors do it. The neighbors do it. Let's do it. Let's burn some coal. Steve in New York says, you don't burn coal in your fireplace because you like breathing too much. Well, there's that. And then there's the fact that I don't have a fireplace, and, well, burning coal would not be the best idea around here. Harry just sent me a link to a company that will customize your firearm in camo, in real tree or mossy oak or natural or lost camo. It's as easy as pick a pattern, complete the form, package, and ship. Is it just cool, or does it indicate a certain propensity on our part for thinking we might need to go into the woods and defend freedom one of these here days. Just a question. Just an inquiry. And your thoughts are always welcome. It looks like, I guess, we're not going to get to Jim Hill this evening and his magnificent rug. It could not look more fake if it had a chin strap. Agnes saw the picture and kind of shrieked and started to run away and then said, my grandmother had a wig just like that. You see, the neat part is you can actually see the sort of lay of the rug, like the whatever the under part is that's got the hair woven into it. It's kind of standing up off of his head, and it's precious. And this guy is a moron because he does everything from talking about the sanctity of merge. And then he gets down to, we'll have to save this for, it'll make it to Titanic Tuesday. I don't think we can make it last until prayer meeting Wednesday, but oh my God. Because once again, you know, the takeaway on this is that you need your guns to defend your family values marriage because, and he uses the word whoremongers, well, they want to come and shoot your wife. And that's why we started with Paul LePage and went down through David Duke and then to this guy. Because the fear of the fear of the you know the those people coming after our white women is a theme that runs for something on the order of more than 400 years. In this country. And I mentioned it's going to be snowing here and down in Oz, up in Oz. Robert says, snow? 91 degrees Fahrenheit here in Sydney, overcast with 40% humidity. It's that baking sort of heat. So never mind this. For you, Robert, and Jennifer and Graham and all the other members of the Horn Family Community Congregation up over down under there, the stay warm does not apply to you. The keep cool does. And such are the challenges of worldwide broadcasting. So I apologize again for the tardiness of the beginning of the broadcast. It was unavoidable. Everything should be A-OK tomorrow. And we will go from there. Thank you to everyone who supports the program. Thank you, Lauren. Thank you very, very much. And, well, we'll see what tomorrow brings us, because I've got a sneaking suspicion it's going to bring us plenty. Somehow or another, it always does. And, hey, look, for Titanic Tuesday, why look, it's National Treasure Phyllis Schlafly. Oh, goody. In China, Steve says, fascism, it's the only reason we have camouflage in colors and shades that have nothing to do with the concept of camouflage. Welcome to the new fashion statement. There we go. Gerald says, please define whoremonger. I'm asking for a friend. I want to meet your friend, Gerald. Your friend asks such interesting questions. We'll have to save that till Titanic Tuesday. Don't let me forget, please. So let's get out of here. Thanks to all of you for, like I said, putting up with my tardiness. Thanks to everyone who supports the program. Thanks to everyone who takes their precious finite time to participate and share in the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 yes, Gina, always, always. It's all for you.